going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. It's episode 216, three games in to the World Series. Kind of a disappointing series so far for the big baseball fans looking for some sort of historic season, but I'm sure we'll get into some of that in a bit. Also, 1 week into the NBA season, lots of crazy stuff so far. We're going to talk about some of it.
Yeah, we're also going to go over a contender tier list for the NFL, kind of similar to power rankings, but obviously this is more of a qualitative thing than a quantitative thing with the numbers that we do in power rankings. So it'll be interesting to see how we rank those. But I'll get started off with the World Series, and specifically the best thing that I saw from this past week was Freddie Freeman's walk-off grand slam in game one of that series. There's a ton of parallels to the Kirk Gibson walk-off homer in game one of the 1988 series. Unfortunately, as A's fans, we kind of know that moment all too well. But outside of it, being an A's fan, that is like one of the more iconic home runs in baseball over the last 50 years. And I think Freddie Freeman's walk-off grand slam is going to be right up there with it, regardless of how the series goes with a 4-0 sweep for the Dodgers, or the Yankees fight back a game or two, or who knows. But regardless, that homer was really cool to see, and I think it was pretty immediately iconic. And I think that's something I began to try to realize when it's happening for these moments over the past few years. I thought back to Corey Seager's home run in extras of last year, where he, I believe, tied it in that. I want to say game one as well, too. But this Freddie Freeman homer at the stage, the viewership in that game is unparalleled for what we've seen in our lifetime. I think maybe David Freese and his heroics in game six is up there. Big Poppy's grand slam in the ALCS of 2013 against the Tigers is really big. And then there's obviously some younger ones as well, too. Luis Gonzalez's walk-off to win the World Series in 01, but we both weren't. Well, you were alive. I was a couple months from being alive. But we obviously did not cognitively watch that game. Regardless, that homer was super cool to see. And in a series that you thought Shohei's going to pop off or Mookie's going to pop off, seeing Freddie Freeman, 100% pretty much be the MVP of this series, it is pretty cool to see for him what would be his second World Series ring in 3 years, which is kind of crazy.
Absolutely. I'm glad you hit on baseball. We got one more of those too, but I'm going to talk about two of the Heisman front runners here for my opener, Ashton Jeanty, Travis Hunter. They both get their teams to six wins, basically on their back, nearly alone. That's good enough for a bowl game. And that's just scratching the surface for these two programs, right? There's much more to come. Ashton Jeanty, basically the worst game of his career, but he still had 130 yards and the game-winning touchdown. I still think it's alive, especially if they make the playoff. Travis Hunter, though, has been banged up a couple times this year already, but what an absolutely crazy game against Cincinnati, right? He shuts down their number one receiver, one for 11 yards, gets bored, goes on to the NFL tight end, transfer from Ohio State, shuts him down. He also had 100 yards and two receiving touchdowns. So either of those two, I'd be happy with it.
Yeah. And, I was trolling you on Sunday or whatever day it was. I said, oh, Jeanty played terrible last night. Yeah, it's just crazy that we look at that game. And I looked at that game, I was like, oh, and scrolled because I was out and about on Saturday. And I just it's kind of crazy now that we've become numb to a, 130 yard, one touchdown performance for him. Is that being a bad game for him? It's kind of crazy to see. But moving on to our player and pitcher of the week, no more rookie of the weeks now with maybe one or two rookies even playing in the World Series. It's kind of crazy. But the player of the week, Skyler, pretty easy. It's Freddie Freeman.
Absolutely. Four hits in the World Series in the first three games, and three of them were homers. That walk-off grand slam, like you talked about, massive advantage for the World Series MVP award, because that's going to be the most iconic moment of the series, it feels like, unless there's another walk-off hit tonight. But we already know this one's pretty much over.
Yeah. Fox put up a graphic yesterday before he hit the homer, and then after he hit the homer, of the most consecutive World Series games with the home run. Yeah. And going into the game, he was just behind George Springer, I believe, who had five in the span of probably 2022. Actually, no, I don't think he was there for that 22 game. So maybe 19 and 17, I'd say. But Freddie Freeman came into this game last night, game three, with four, hit his fifth, so he got that. And it sparked a question that I saw on social media a little bit. In 20 years from now, are we going to remember Freddie as a Dodger, or are we going to remember him as a Brave? And I think if you were to ask that question to me, you know, a month ago, I'd have been like, without a doubt, a Brave. Like, he played for the Braves for 10 years. He got a ring in his final game there. Like, that whole storyline was crazy. But he's arguably had a more, you know, iconic, and definitely a more iconic tenure with the Dodgers, and it's only in his third year with them. So kind of crazy to see. I'm just curious, what do you think in 20 years? How do you think we'll remember him?
I think you're right. It's probably going to lean towards the Dodgers, but we know the history. You mentioned it earlier. We remember all the old matchups, so I don't think we'll ever forget where he started, but this Dodgers career definitely clinches his spot in the Hall of Fame, I think.
Yeah, and if he goes in as a Dodger or a Brave, it'll definitely be something that is quite contentious with those two. Obviously, he's a fan favorite for both those teams. Want to bring for both. But moving on to Pitcher of the Week, Skyler, who do you choose here? A couple Dodgers starters to choose from.
Yeah, excuse the dog going nuts in the background, if you can hear it.
Can't hear him.
Perfect. Walker Buehler, he's going to get his second in a row from me. Again, he's continued to be the best starter of the postseason so far, especially a team who's lost most of their top-tier pitching to injury. And it was the Game 3 start, 5 shutout at Yankee Stadium. They secured that 3-0 lead and basically means there's nothing left to do for Walker Buehler this season.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be Walker Buehler and his kind of just how the vibe's been around him. Changed from regular season to playoffs is very uncharacteristic for a baseball season and how that goes, because usually the pitchers that suck stay bad. Guys who don't have their stuff just don't have their stuff. He's found a way to get his stuff, especially starting in the NLCS with that crazy start against the Mets where his stuff was ridiculous. And then last night as well, too. I got off to a bit of concern with him in the first inning where he really was only able to throw his fastball for a strike, his curveball, and his cutter. Even though he struck out Judge on the cutter, I don't think he threw any of them in the zone in the entire first inning. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe this could be a game that we have here because the Dodgers had already scored by that point, of course. But he locked it in. He was throwing everything for strikes in the second through fifth innings. And for Walker Buehler, a guy coming off of Tommy John last year as well, too, it's pretty cool to see that he's getting his, you know, his time to perform in the World Series on the biggest stage. And it scares me for how good this Dodgers team is going to be for a very, very long time. Moving on to the football awards, player of the week. There's a ton of different quarterbacks, receivers, running backs that you could go with here. Who do you end up choosing for your player of the week?
I'm going to go with Jameis. Jameis Winston has 334 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks in his debut as a starter this season for Cleveland, at least. Massive win over the division rival Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for Kirk Cousins. I think he had 4 touchdowns, no picks, and like 250 yards. But I went with Jameis as well, too. Just the situation surrounding that was pretty cool for him to see his first start this year for the Browns. And he obviously dominated in that. He found Cedric Tillman, found David Njoku, and his fantasy owners of those guys. I enjoyed that. But 334, 3 TDs, no picks for a guy who's notoriously known for throwing picks. It's pretty cool to see, as well as some of his speeches that he made, the play for the decal or play for the people on your helmet or something like that. And he's going, oh, we don't have a decal. So it's just, I don't know if he does that on purpose. It's kind of like humor and lighten up the mood or something like that in those scenarios where people can get tense. But whatever he did on Sunday was working. And I enjoy Jameis. I like seeing him succeed. And I think the majority of people do as well, too. Defensive player of the week.
I'm going with TJ Watt. Once again, TJ basically makes the two biggest plays of the game last night for Pittsburgh. They win a close one against the Giants. And this team's oddly similar to their one squad that started around 10-0 a couple of years ago. They don't win that one without TJ Watt, especially with some of the touchdowns getting called back. I hear that from Alex a bunch today.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the Steelers specifically in a little bit and what my opinions are on them. But TJ Watt's got to be the defensive player of the week for his performance. I've said this multiple times, the knack that he has for the football is uncanny when it comes to defensive players in this generation. Two sacks and a forced fumble and, biggest moment of the game last night on Monday Night Football. So TJ Watt, in my opinion, probably the best defensive player in football besides maybe a Fred Warner and a couple other guys as well, too. But he's ridiculous. So TJ Watt, defensive player of the week. On to the rookie of the week.
I'm going to go with another familiar face, Jaden Daniels, again, because I think he had the best play of the season so far. It was a slow start. He was battling with the rib injury all week, but he finishes with over 300 yards, no picks, and, of course, the game-winning Hail Mary to Noah Brown, which gets him to a ridiculous 6-2 record, first place in the East.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels definitely had the most iconic play of the week, and I went with him as my rookie of the week as well, too. Maybe the all-around numbers, not anything ridiculously crazy with the 21 for 38 for a guy that we've seen have completion percentage in the 80 and 90 percentile a couple times this year. But 326 passing yards, 52 rushing yards, and then the touchdown came at the best possible moment that it could have. So Jaden Daniels, we know how good he is. We're seeing it. At least you and me definitely knew how good he was going into this year. But seeing it on the national stage is pretty cool for a guy that, we've liked for a long time. Moving on to our contender tier list. We're doing all the NFL teams. S through F or whatever you want to title the tiers is fine. I guess we'll start from the bottom. I titled this tier BED Dead. What did you do for your F tier?
So I ended up with 8 different tiers. I think I was messing around last year on this same exact tier, and I had these tiers typed out. So at the bottom, I have you're in contention for the number one pick.
All right, I'll let you go through that tier then.
Okay. I only have 5 teams down here. I stuck to the name. So we're going to have the Carolina Panthers for obvious reasons. Tennessee Titans. Who knows if they let Will Levis come back this season. The Raiders, they've obviously have gone into a selling mode right now. And the 2 New Jersey teams, Jets and Giants. They just don't have enough, whatever reason it is. They can't score points this season.
What's your next tier title, just so I can know how to pace myself here?
Young but intriguing. It's basically just the next tier up.
All right, I'll do this tier, and then I'll let you do the 2 tiers after. So my DED dead tier has 9 teams in it. It'll start with the Saints. Losers of 6 in a row. Started off 2-0, but it just doesn't have that same vibe with the Bucks and the Falcons being pretty decent squads, even with the Bucks not having Godwin and Evans for the foreseeable future. I still think the Saints are behind the 8-ball here, and I think they're pretty much dead at this point. The Jags, we've seen them trade people. We've seen them have Christian Kirk now get out for the season with a not dislocated, broken collarbone. That doesn't feel good. They're dead. Next up, the Giants. We saw this on last night. If they were able to win the game, they maybe stay in, a different category, but they lose and kind of kill their season effectively. There, the Titans, I don't need much explanation for this one. They are bad, and they lose a lot of football games. The Panthers, kind of the same thing, especially Deontay Johnson now just got traded, so we can kind of see what their picture is for the rest of the season with what they got going on. The Browns, I know they're not in the baddest spot right now if Jameis Winston, that quarterback, but being 2-6 is still not a good spot to be. Especially with your division, the Bengals have not been good, but the Ravens and the Steelers are finding ways to win games. They're not going to make it in the AFC playoffs. I have the Raiders here. Unfortunately, my team, you don't need to watch this team more than one game to realize what this team is doing right now. The Patriots, they come off a good victory against the Jets, but I think everybody knows that this team doesn't have it. And then the last team, you're going to hate this one, but it is what it is. The Jets are at 2-6. I guess if they run the table, they have a chance, but I'm betting on them not to run the table right now. So the Jets are down.
Yeah. All right. So the next group here, and I'll do the next two because it's very similar, right? But I feel like there's a difference. We'll go to the young but intriguing group here. These are the teams. I don't think they're going to make a playoff run, but they could probably pick in the top 10 too. We'll start off with the Patriots. They're a lot more intriguing with Drake May active. He's not right now, but I'm sure that he'll get back from the concussion at some point. The Saints, it's been an interesting ride with Spencer Rattler and Jake Haener with Carr out. I feel like Jake Haener should probably start next week, but, you know, we'll see. Jacksonville, I don't trust anything that's going on there. They've had a lot of injuries. But, hey, Trevor Lawrence is going to be there for a while. You're not tanking, obviously. And I feel similar about the Chargers, too. The Chargers are going to lead this group because they got four wins. It's going okay, but they're going to go with the scheme rather than trying to win games right now, I think. They probably gave Harbaugh a one-year pass, and it's going better than expected so far. The next year, again, it's probably grouped together similar for you. These are the teams that are just mediocre. They're not going to the playoffs. These are the Cowboys. I don't trust them in big games. The Dolphins, too many injuries. Seattle Seahawks, first year in the system. It's not really working out. The Cleveland Browns are fun, of course, but they got a lot of problems themselves and a backup quarterback. And the Colts, they just benched their number five overall pick for Joe Flacco.
Yeah, my second to bottom tier is a something went wrong tier. So these teams kind of had higher aspirations going into the season, and things just aren't working out through the first 8 weeks of the season. So I have the Dolphins leading off this category. Obviously, Tua has been out for most of the year. We saw their offense completely suffer. Tua comes back last week. You think, okay, everything's going to be quite all right, and they lose to the Cardinals at home. So something's going wrong there, and that's pretty clear to see. The Bengals I have are the next team on here. They can definitely, you know, storm back. And like Joe Burrow said, we just got to win 7 out of the next 9 to get in. But they still got to win 7 out of the next 9, which is tough to do. And they lost too many games early. And I think that's what they're seeing as a problem here. Losing week one of the Patriots was not a good start. And I think everybody knows that. Next one is the Rams. I still think the Rams probably have a higher chance to make the playoffs out of most of these teams, considering how their division is right now. But with the receivers and Puka and Freddie Gilliard or something, mm-hmm. You're looking at me kind of crazy. I haven't seen it quite yet. But with the Rams, Puka and Kupp getting hurt is not good. They still got a chance, but it's not looking good as of right now. Next team is the Dallas Cowboys. Did I just see Freddie Gilliard? I did. That's pretty crazy. 2-0 Dodgers in the first, trying to clinch the World Series. But the Dallas Cowboys are the next team here. Their defense was just so bad for the first few weeks of the season. It still is pretty bad. I still think they're probably done for, especially with the Commanders pulling their weight in the division. The Colts are the next team. You said it, like they just benched their quarterback for Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco has been good. Don't get me wrong. But that's not the direction that your franchise wants to be in. And then Tampa Bay, I also have on here. I think Tampa Bay is probably one of the better teams out of this entire grouping. But with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin out for the foreseeable future, it's going to be tough for them to get back in it. And I think, with the Falcons kind of, or now they've won both games over them in the division, it's tough for them in general to even do anything. They're not going to have the tiebreaker. They're already, you know, down a game in there as well, too. What is your next tier, Skyler?
Yeah, if you're familiar with Big Cat's tier list that he does, this is basically the fun and frisky tier. It's the teams that are in the hunt. We'll start off with the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler has been on a tear so far this season. We'll see what happens when they play more divisional games for sure. I feel very similar about the Denver Broncos. They haven't had the toughest matchups, but hey, good for Bo Nix, man. This is better than we thought he was going to be. Right next to them is Tampa Bay, the team they demolished. So I have Denver ahead of them. The injuries suck. Cause I like Baker and I like seeing him throw the ball around. I'm sure he's still going to have that, but it's not going to be as much firepower. And it's kind of the opposite with the Rams. They're starting to pick things back up, but is it too late of a start for them? I have them in the fun but frisky tier.
My tier here kind of aligns with you, so I'll just go right off now. it's the good story, but not happening tier. It starts off with the Chargers. I was thinking about something went wrong here because they just, you know, didn't do enough in the offseason to get Justin Herbert weapons. But they've been winning games still, and I think that story of Harbaugh coming back is pretty cool, but it's not going to happen. I don't think their roster, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is close to being, you know, a legitimate playoff contender. I will also say with this, probably one or two of these teams will sneak into the playoffs, but those teams are going to be a 7 seed or 6 seed, and they're not going to do things effectively in the playoff. Next up, I have the Seahawks. You know, McDaniel comes in, or McDonald. Mike McDonald, yeah. Not McDaniel.
Yes, McDonald. Yeah.
Mike McDonald comes in. They got a lot of good players on their team. I just think it's a ton of moving parts. This team, I think, could be something that's a wrecking force in the future, especially if they figure out the long-term QB decision. But as of right now, it's not happening. Next up I have is the Bears. They lose a heartbreaker on Sunday against the Commanders. Caleb Williams is there, though, so they're going to be around for a long time, but it's just not happening this year. Next one is the Cardinals. The Cardinals have had some fun games this year, a couple of really fun ones against Miami, San Francisco, but it's not going to happen this year. That defense just isn't good enough to hold up down the stretch, in my opinion. And the last one is the Denver Broncos. This roster still sucks. Like, it's not sugarcoating it. They're finding ways to win games due to their defense. I know Bo Nix has been good, but it's not going to happen. So on to your next tier, Scott.
Yeah, the next two tiers, I won't do them both, but just to let you know, I got coming up, these are the potential wildcard teams, the teams that have a lot of work to do, but they're still on the outside looking in. That's San Francisco 49ers. I still don't know who's coming back, whose injuries for real, who's been playing hurt this entire season and about to explode, a.k.a. George Kittle. So that's going to be an interesting one. Chicago Bears are right next to them. Two NFC teams, I think, that have all the talent in the world, but it just hasn't gone their way so far. And then, of course, the Cincinnati Bengals. There's no way I can project them to be a playoff team right now, but it's not over.
Yeah. What's your next tier?
Playoff teams. It is.
Yeah. Go ahead on that one.
Okay. So these are six teams, I think, that should probably be in the wild card based on what we saw so far this season. That's the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen's been really good. Houston Texans, kind of a stinker last week, but they ended up with the W, so it's okay. Very similar with the Green Bay Packers against Jacksonville. They should be there. Next up is the Atlanta Falcons. They swept Tampa Bay. Things are looking really good for them. The Washington Commanders, 6-2, just a massive head start, especially with the rookie quarterback, because you know he's going to have some sort of welcome to the league moment at some point. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's been pretty ugly per usual, but they got the win again, right?
Yeah, I have five teams in this next category that I'm going to talk about. So last time I had good story, but not happening. This one is good story, but likely not happening.
Okay.
So just a slight difference. These teams are good. They, you know, maybe excel at the top of the league at some specific thing, but there's a considerable problem that is going to make them so they can't win the Super Bowl. The first one I have is the Commanders. I just think the weapons and the defense for Jaden Daniels is not going to be good enough for them to win the Super Bowl. They are 6-2. Great story. Not just a good story. But they are not going to win the Super Bowl. And I do think they do make the playoffs. Next team is the Steelers. Defense, top of the line. Offense? I don't know. I don't trust in a Pickens, Najee, Russell Wilson kind of band of misfits offense that they have right now. It's been good in the first 2 weeks they've had Wilson playing, but I want to see it long term before I really say that they are, you know, a legitimate threat to any of the top dogs in the AFC. Next one is the Vikings. They start off the season 5-0. They lose 2 games in a row. I still think they're a good team. I believe they will bounce back against the Colts on Sunday Night Football, but at the end of the day, Sam Darnold, he might make a mistake. And that's something that it could be a problem with them when it comes down to it, and their defense as well, too. The Packers, I think this is the most sound roster on the teams that I have in here. Maybe the next team as well, too. But I don't think they're as good as some of the other teams in the NFC, and that's their problem. Same with the Falcons as well, too. I like this Falcons roster. I like the weapons. I like defense, especially their defensive backs. But it just seems like no matter who they have, their defense still gets thrashed through. So that's not a good thing to have. And if you don't have a good defense, you're not going to win the bowl. So that's my good story, but likely not happening tier. Now on to the top two for me and our the top two for you as well, too. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is basically the A tier. These are the Super Bowl contenders. We'll start it off with Baltimore. It was a rough one against Cleveland. I immediately regretted moving them up in my power rankings, but we'll get to that next week. Still, you got Lamar Jackson. You're going to be in the same spot you were in last year. And Deontay Johnson. Yeah, that happened today. Yeah. Next up, I do have Minnesota in the A tier, the Super Bowl contenders, because I'm looking at possible playoff matchups. I think Brian Flores would have a field day against Atlanta or Washington, whether they were at home or on the road. So I included them in there right next to Philly. And you mentioned it on your last tier, defense is very important. Last year, they didn't really have it. The year before, they went to the Super Bowl. These past couple weeks, it's been great. 28-3 win. They dominated again, just pounding the rock. And that'll take you pretty far place in the NFC playoffs. And that's it.
Yeah. My second tier is going to be titled The Biggest Threats. That's because my top tier is titled The Top Dogs. So these are the biggest threats of those top dog teams. I have five teams in here. I'll start it off with the Ravens. We know what this team is capable of. They added Deontay Johnson as well today too, which I think even helps even more kind of resemble that Titans offense that they had with Derrick Henry when they were the top team in the AFC going into the playoffs a couple of years ago. But having Lamar Jackson, having that defense, they got a chance to do it. And that's why I have them at the top of this biggest threats list. The next team I have on here, I'll talk about as the Texans. I know they lost Stephon Diggs today to a torn ACL, but I think their offense is going to be just fine with CJ Stroud, Tank Dell, and Nico Collins coming back soon as well, too, with Joe Mixon playing the way that he is. I think that offense will be just fine. And their defense is really good as well, too, which I think is a not talked about enough aspect of that team. Next team I have in here is the Niners. I know their record isn't the best, but the division's wide open right now, and I think that really favors them. I know they've lost a couple of divisional games, which will probably hurt when it comes down to tiebreakers and whatnot. But that Niner team, you can't deny the roster. You can't deny the track record, and I think that's the biggest reason for why they're still up there for me. Next team I have in here is going to be the Philadelphia Eagles. Ever since 2022, they've been trying to find a spot to get back to how that team was. It feels like these past 2 weeks, they've had it. And it started with that win over the Giants last week and then a win over the Bengals. It felt like it was always there throughout the entire game. And that's just not something we've seen from the Nick Sirianni-led Eagles last year or in the majority of this year either. So I think the Eagles are back and put me or put them in that top tier. Or not top tier, but that second tier for me. Next up is the Buffalo Bills. This is the last team I have in here. This is a Josh Allen MVP type team. I see you freaking out right now. I'm kind of confused of what's going on.
We'll get there
in a second. But Josh Allen, that team's really good. He's got weapons even more now as well, too. So the Bills end off my biggest threats here. Did he try to tick off his glove?
Yeah, basically what happens, if you're listening at home, is Mookie Betts goes to catch a fly ball kind of in foul territory. A Yankee fan grabbed his arm and wouldn't let go. That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, those guys are going to be very quickly escorted out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Pretty funny. I'm sure people will see that on social media. And
yeah,
that's kind of crazy. I'm seeing some texts and stuff right now. Let me get into that. That's
well, all right.
Yeah, imagine buying World Series tickets first row, and in the first setting of the game when your team's down 3-0 in the series, you do some stupid shit like that and you get kicked out. Not only will that guy get kicked out of the stadium, he's probably never going to be allowed back to an MLB field ever.
No way. And the craziest part is a guy like Steve Bartman, right, will be banned. And now, you know, 20 years later, he's allowed back in, but he doesn't want to have anything to do with it because
exactly.
He made an honest mistake and it ruined his life. And this guy is just being a dick right now to Mookie Betts. And I'm sorry, we just had to talk about it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Definitely that's something I've seen before. But maybe it sets the Yankees on fire. Who knows? Maybe they like the disrespect. We know the stigma around Yankee fans is that they are annoying assholes. And that stigma is true. Let me first not say that. But not all of them. There's definitely some that aren't. But man, oh man, that's kind of crazy. On to our top tier of our contender tier list.
Yeah, I have just two teams left. It's the Super Bowl favorites. It was my preseason prediction, and I don't see myself changing anything unless there's another massive injury with the NFC team here. But we'll start with Kansas City, right? They're undefeated. Mahomes hasn't been good at all this season, but it's been just enough. He knows when to get it to Kelsey when it's time, and that defense is ridiculous. We talk about it every week. It's like watching the 0-3 Patriots or something, right? They don't have to do anything except lock in on two drives. End of the first half, end of the second half, and it's a win. Detroit, talk about fun and frisky. These guys come up with plays throwing downfield to their right tackle. I mean, this is awesome. I would love to have Ben Jones as my play caller, and I'm going to keep riding with Detroit over Minnesota and Philly until they prove me wrong.
Yeah. I got the same two teams in my top dogs category, so it's one from the AFC, one from the NFC. I'll start off with the Chiefs. I know they won't get this wide receiver core this year due to the injuries, but they potentially could have had a Rashee Rice, DeAndre Hopkins, and Hollywood Brown receiving core with Travis Kelce at tight end, which would have been crazy. Obviously, Rashee's out for the season. There's a chance maybe Hollywood comes back for the playoffs, but D-Hop's now kind of getting more into the fold for them as they just trade from this past week. But the defense is a story of this team. We've talked about it multiple times, how this is kind of just a new era for them where their offense doesn't need to be that good. And their defense is just so damn good that they're not going to have to score 30 points a game to win. And when they're in that spot and you have Patrick Mahomes, and he's likely just going to have to lead a decent drive when their team is already up two possessions in the last quarter of the game, he's going to get that done for the majority of the time. Not just the majority, the vast, you know, probably all of it. When it comes down to it. Next team, probably the most fun team in the NFL, in the Detroit Lions. Just what they do on offense can be different every week, but it still has the same results. Jared Goff had 85 passing yards and 3 touchdowns on Sunday. The return team had like 300 return yards, which was pretty ridiculous. They scored 52 points with, I think, 200 yards of offense. That's not something that we see very often. But this Detroit Lions team feels like a Super Bowl winning team. It kind of reminds me a little bit. It's a weird comparison to make because they're so different, but I still have like, kind of like the same vibe as like the 2015 Carolina Panthers, where they just beat the shit out of you. And they know that they're going to beat the shit out of you going into those games. And I think that's something that we saw with that 2015 Panthers team. I know the teams are completely different. Their makeup, how they play their offense, how they play defense is different. But it just feels like that we're going to beat the shit out of you, and we know that we're going to beat the shit out of you type aspect of a team is really rare. And it's really cool to see with the Lions, especially with some stuff that they've gone through, especially the fans in the last 80 years. You know?
Yeah, I like that comparison, because when you started that, I was thinking 2017 Falcons. And it's basically the same era, just the unstoppable offenses. And by the way, I think I accidentally called their OC Ben Jones the center. I meant Ben Johnson, obviously.
Yeah. But that's our tier list. So we'll move on from that and into some NBA overreactions. Obviously, the season is ridiculously early, so these aren't set in stone or anything like that. But we've got seven different topics to talk about and kind of stuff that's going on. So we'll start off with the Celtics. The Celtics seem to be the best team in the NBA yet again. They are undefeated through 3 games, and it feels like they're just blowing out whoever they play. So it starts off with a simple one. Should they continue to play the season or just give the championship to the Celtics again?
No, I like it, but no, still. Let's play the season, see what happens. I know it might bring up some bad memories for us, but the 73-9 and Warriors looked like the most unstoppable team ever assembled. They lost in the finals, obviously. We both know even when you're shooting lights out and you feel unstoppable, which the Celtics probably do right now. I mean, even Peyton Pritchard's on fire. Anything can happen to you once you get to the finals.
Yeah. Definitely helps that they have been to the finals now twice. They've won it once. So having that, history being there is good for them. But I'm on that same page. They obviously should continue playing the season. There's a good chance the Celtics do end up being a champion at the end of the season again. And it feels like, in my opinion, probably the biggest early season favorite since those 2017-2018 Warriors. Yeah. And I know as a Warrior fan, it felt awesome going into the season. Yep, we're winning it all this year. There was no doubt in it. And there was no doubt, in the playoffs or anything like that. It just happened. This year, it kind of feels that way for the Celtics. I think they're a step below that Warriors team. And I think if you put them up against the 17 Warriors, maybe it's just my bias. But the Warriors would probably 20-ball them pretty easily. That's just how good that team was. But this feels like a really damn good team in Boston. They got two stars. They got two young stars. And they got like seven or eight pieces that are really good as well too. And that's a very unique thing to see in the modern day NBA. And you got to go back to, the 1965 Celtics when they had 11 Hall of Famers. I know this team doesn't have 11 Hall of Famers. There's no way that's happening, but it just, the depth of that team is unrivaled in the NBA.
It's the way that all of them are unselfish too. That's the main purpose. Every team has a guy or two that's like, no, I'm taking my shot. I don't care what the philosophy is. But no, that's the comparison with the Warriors right there.
Yeah. And maybe the closest parallel to the Celtics is Oklahoma City Thunder, which will segue us perfectly into our next segment. Are the Oklahoma City Thunder the best team in the West?
Yeah, I think the opening day win in Denver was a big statement, at least for the first month of the season for the West. Chet denied Jokic. He only shot 6 for 13 in that one. SGA's been doing his thing. So far, it's 29 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists for him. Just an incredible start.
Yeah, I do think that they are the best team in the West as of right now. Their defense is the reason, though, I think it is. Particularly with Chet stepping up on the defensive end in year two, or I guess year three for him, but year two playing, they've only allowed 95 points per game. The next closest is the Warriors at 100. And after that, I believe it's like 107 or something like that. But just showing that to Chauncey Billups in 2004, but if Chauncey Billups sees it, he's the head coach for the Blazers. But regardless, this OKC team is good. They do feel really deep. Not as deep as the Celtics and not as enough experience to be on that same level. But with Chet and SGA as the stars leading the way, with Jalen Williams, Alex Caruso, and all the guys that they have around them, it just feels like this team is kind of a championship or bust scenario now at this point with how good it is on the roster side of it. Next up, J.J. Redick has been the speculation of a lot of conversation in his first couple of games as an NBA head coach. Is it time that we say he already is a top 10 coach in the league?
100%. I don't think we even need to list them, because sometimes in the NBA, it's the attitude and the culture that a new coach brings that outweighs the X's and O's. Luckily for the Lakers, J.J. Redick has both of these aspects working really early. I feel like he's the closest guy we've had since Steve Kerr, where he is great for the game as an analyst, will most definitely be a member of a front office someday, but his time as a head coach has the chance to be very special because he combines all of these aspects of the game together.
Yeah, I'm going to say for sure he's a top 10 coach. And I'll compare this to other LeBron teams, because that's obviously what J.J. Redick has right now. It always feels like with those LeBron teams that LeBron is the coach of that team. And some people put it in a negative way with LeBron that he doesn't listen to his coach. I'm not going to do that. I don't think it is. I just think LeBron's the smartest player to ever play the game. And no coach is even going to have that same level of basketball IQ that he has with just his experience and playing the game for so long. But this feels like the most control a coach has had over a LeBron-led team since Eric Spoelstra and those Miami Heat teams in the early 2010s. And that's a special thing to have. When everybody's coachable, I think sometimes it can affect other players more than what it affects the head coach. And obviously, as the Los Angeles Lakers coach, you're going to get a lot of, shit. And we saw it even with when they won in 2020. Like, all their coaches since Phil Jackson have been like shit on pretty heavily, especially with Darvin Ham, Frank Vogel, But this year and this era with JJ Redick feels different. Maybe it's, we're still in the honeymoon phase of it. And, you know, 40 games from now, they're, I don't know, 25-20 and things are changing. But Josh, or not Josh Redick, he's not coaching the NBA. JJ Redick definitely feels like a top 10 coach in the NBA. Next up, we're talking on the opposite spectrum. It's the Detroit Pistons, who have been terrible forever. Not forever. They won an 0-4, but they are 0-4 again this season. So it begs the question, Skyler, is Detroit still the worst team in the league?
Shout out to our guy, Sham, big Pistons fan, because no, I don't think they're going to finish at the bottom this year. Finally. Don't get me wrong. They got a lot of problems still, but not a lot of bottom feeders have a backcourt duo like Cunningham and Ivy. Ivy even had a game recently where he had to take things over. Cade was having a tough time in Boston, understandably, but Ivy almost brought him back in that game. Brooklyn isn't going to get a full season from Schroeder or Ben Simmons. There's always the Wizards. They're a disaster. Talking about a different Wizards team, the Wall and Beal Wizards team, they didn't win anything, but they were never last. And I think that's probably the next step for Detroit is a 10 seed, a fun team that just can't really get over the hump, but it's better than last place, right?
Yeah. I'd say that you can definitely make a case for Brooklyn, who's actually beating the Nuggets right now. Portland, I think you could definitely make a case for.
Yeah.
And I think Utah as well, too, when you really look at the roster and the depth that they lack and star power that they lack besides maybe Lauri Markkanen. I think the stardom between Ivy and Cade is definitely something that wants me to say no about them being the worst team. So I'm going to put Portland and I think Utah below them. I think Brooklyn might be above them or – Yeah, it might be above them, but they're close. And to be close for 5 years in a row is definitely an alarming thing to have happen. Moving on to Tyrese Maxey into some individual player stuff. He's been going ham for the 76ers, and I know they've lost two out of their first three, sitting at 1-2 right now. But he's been not the problem, that's for sure. Do you think Tyrese Maxey is a top five MVP candidate this year?
I understand the thinking behind this. He's probably the most valuable player in Philly, but there's no way he's going to be able to play 43 minutes per game all season long. I think he's eventually going to revert back to a guy who's 25-3, which isn't bad, of course, but I just see guys like Jalen Green, LaMelo Ball, bound to pass him up at some point. So I wouldn't bank on this same projection going further.
I'm a fan of Tyrese Maxey. I enjoyed him when he was in college, and I'm enjoying him in his fifth year of the NBA as of right now. It's kind of crazy to think he's already in year five.
Yeah.
But I think if the Sixers are good, it's going to be because of him, not because of Paul George and not because of Embiid. I know both those dudes are injury prone, to say the least, and they've already, you know, missed time this year. But Tyrese Maxey seems like a steady bucket right now for the Sixers, and he's good on both ends, and that ability helps him a ton. And what he's doing right now is, if the Sixers are good, the reason why they will be good. I don't think they will be, though, unfortunately. I think we're probably going to see him around 500 this year, maybe a little bit over. Maybe they sneak to a 6 or 5 spot in the Detroit. Or not in Detroit, in the Eastern Conference. I don't know why I said Detroit. But I think it's probably top 10, as if for Maxey. I think top 5 is a little bit too steep. I'm not putting him in that Luka Jokic category of guys that can compete for MVP. So I think, you know, 8 or 9 would be probably where he gets slotted at the end of the year. Next up, another guy having a really good season so far is De'Aaron Fox. He's averaging a double-double, something he hasn't done, obviously, in his career the most. He's averaged assist-wise was 7. He did that a couple times in his career, once in his second season, and I believe once a couple seasons after that as well, too. So do you think De'Aaron Fox can average a double-double? Is this a sustainable thing for a guard that's never really been viewed as maybe a passer?
He could, absolutely. The problem is he's such a great fourth quarter scorer that they're going to have him take a lot of these big shots, especially in a big game, even though he's technically been the third option this year in sack. But hey, if Trae Young can do it, he absolutely has the skills necessary to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say no for De'Aaron Fox. I think he'll be close. I think it might be like an 8.7 or something like that. Partially because of how the late game scenario goes with them and him winning the clutch player of the year a couple of years ago and how good he's been late in games. But I also think it's the play style of DeMar DeRozan. I think DeMar DeRozan late in games when he's getting shots is going to be kind of more of that ISO, not more of that like catch and shoot three in the corner. That's not how DeMar plays. DeMar's going to get it. He's going to go in the post. He's going to go ahead and get you a bucket, but it's going to take a little bit for him to get his time and his shot. And that's nothing against DeMar. I think that's something that's great for them, that team. But I think it will hurt the De'Aaron Fox assist total at the end of the year. So I think he's going to fall just short. But Sacramento, maybe not the record is the greatest right now because I believe they are 1-2. But I like that offense. Last team that we're going to talk about is the Dubs. Stephen Curry's already hurt, but they've looked good in the first three games. They did lose to the Clippers, but the Clippers have looked also pretty good in the first three games. 123.7 points per game right now is second in the NBA, only behind the one and only Boston Celtics. So do you think the Dubs are back? And obviously this doesn't mean, you know, championship favorites back, but you know, maybe towards that 2022 type vibe of Band of Misfits with the possibility to do it all.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to still say no. I like some of the new pieces. Clay didn't really fit anymore, and Buddy Hield has no problem coming off of the bench. He's had two spectacular games out of three, but it all falls on Steph Curry, which isn't fair, but the ankle problems, if they last all season long, we can't ask Wiggins to score 30 a night either because he's already hurt. And even if he does come back, score 30 a game, they've been handing the ball over at a ridiculous rate. They gave away that game against the Clippers. It was like 19 turnovers just in the second half. And these are the ones you got to win if you want to play in the Western Conference playoffs. So I'm going to have them just out again, but I'm still going to watch every game. I'm still going to be rooting for them to get into the play-in. I just think they're missing something. But it's nice to see they're still playing defense. The philosophy's still there, right?
Yeah. I definitely think this team is a lot better than last year's team. It's definitely better than 2021's team as well, too. But it all hinges on Steph's health, of course. And if he's not healthy, then this team is not going to be back. They're not going to compete for a championship. But if he's healthy, which he already isn't, unfortunately. But if he is healthy, there's a chance this team could be, you know, one of the upper echelon teams in the West. I'm not saying, you know, they're going to be the one seed and win 65 games or anything like that. But when it comes to the playoffs, if this team is healthy and they're the five seed or the four seed or whatever, and they kind of have, you know, home field advantage over the Dallas Mavericks or something like that, it can happen because we've seen what Steph can do. We know his ability. And I think this team has also just gotten a lot more deep this year. And I go back last year, pretty much every game after watching it, I'd look at the box score, kind of see how things went statistically, and kind of just look at, you know, who played what minutes and whatnot. This year, I look at it and I see the names and I'm like, I kind of like that guy. Yeah. I kind of like that guy as well, too. I like D'Anthony Melton and his two-way ability. I love Buddy Hield and how he can shoot. I like Kuminga in the role that he's at. I like, I don't know if I said Buddy Hield yet, but I love Buddy Hield and the way he shoots the ball. I love Trayce Jackson-Davis and his ability to kind of just be that enforcer inside and kind of the better Looney in the modern day of basketball. And I like how Looney's still getting playing time as well, too. And I think Brandon Podziemski, all these dudes that we use are pretty damn good basketball players. And that's just not like, oh, yeah, they're in the NBA, they're basketball players. Like, these guys are good players and I think can play a role. Most of them have already played a role on a championship team before, which I think is a huge part as well, too.
They figured out the right guys to pick up. Yeah.
Exactly. The only thing I think it lacks is maybe the bit of stardom besides Steph is going to be tough. What's going to happen when you need scoring and Steph's just not having his night? And you know, that doesn't happen often. But Buddy Hield's not really a creator. He's a guy that's going to catch off. No, not off the dribble creator is what I'm trying to say. He's obviously going to do some stuff off the catch, which is pretty crazy. but I don't know how they fix that either, which is tough to say. Maybe a marketing. I don't want to give up a lot of stuff on this team either, because then you kind of get in that spot. Yeah. So I don't know how they address it, but I definitely appreciate this effort to try to get Steph one more ring before he retires, which would be very cool to get number five.
Basketball's at a pretty good place compared to 10 years ago. That's for sure.
Yeah. Moving on though to halftime or second half, Skyler, tell me about the College 10 week.
Yeah. Review. Yeah. So we're going to go through, per usual, all of the games you should be checking into this weekend. No mock draft right now. I looked at it. I took a look. I did a couple picks, and I realized everybody's 2-6 right now. Let's wait another week. And I decided the same thing on the Heisman watch. Everyone is so close together. We need a big game that alters the order. So let's get into it. Friday night, number 15, Boise State's going to host San Diego State, if anyone cares, because Boise's a 24-point favorite. But I'll be watching my guy Ashton Genty. Maddox Madsen's looked much better this season. I mean, I was getting worried there for a second, but, you know, pretty good situation at the 15 spot. And then Saturday morning, we're going to start off the day with some fireworks. It's number 4, Ohio State, at number 3, Penn State. The Buckeyes have been pretty underwhelming outside of their 5-star freshman receiver, Jeremiah Smith. But Drew Aller is out against against Ohio State. That leaves things very hard to analyze. What I do know is that James Franklin's only beaten Ohio State one time. It's probably not going to be this time either. At 12:30, the second slate kind of determines what conference you feel like watching. There's a lot of similar ranked games here. The SEC game is going to be number 2, Georgia hosting Florida. In case it's you got a scare there or you're checking out some prospects, that big Big Ten game is going to be number 1, Oregon at Michigan. When you got number 1 going on the road in a tough place, it's always going to be a little interesting, even if Michigan gets blown out. And then the crazy Big 12 game should be Texas Tech at undefeated number 11, Iowa State. Interesting one. Obviously, it's down to them, BYU, Kansas State. At 4:30, we have 5-3 Louisville at number 11, Clemson. I know we both like Clemson, and we'll get into the Hoosier 12 in a minute. 30 minutes after that one, it's another pretty big ranked ACC matchup. That's going to be undefeated Pitt at 7-1 SMU. And there's no real Pac-12 Mountain West after dark for some reason this week. So that's where we finish things off. Yeah. Kicking us over.
Moving on to where's Hoosier 12, not where's your 12. Because it's right here. But who's your 12? It'll go in the same segments that we did last time. The top 4, the next 7, and then your number 12 seed, usually the group of 5. So who is your top 4 teams, your conference winners in the SEC, Big 12, Big 10, and the ACC?
At number 1, we got Oregon. They should be undefeated going into Lucas Oil, whether it's Indiana or Ohio State. So I'm going to give them the nod there. It's less of a question mark. They've gotten the job done so far. Number 2, I have Georgia. They beat the crap out of Texas. That is really big for them. They seem to be getting back on track after the Alabama game. Number 3, I'm going to stick with Clemson. I still think they beat Miami at a neutral site. They got to get the job done at Pitt to secure that spot in a couple weeks, but other than that, I like Clemson and Miami to make it. Spoiler. And then the 4 spot, I am going to keep it with BYU. I will say they win the Big 12. I have my doubts, but what is supposed to be the toughest game of the year for them in 2 weeks at Utah, it doesn't look as bad with Isaac Wilson running the show over there.
Number 1 for me is going to be Oregon. Probably the only SEC, or did Austin Wells just go yard? Oh, no. Off the ball. But Oregon's probably going to be the only Big Ten or SEC team to go undefeated in the regular season. I think that clear segue to the number 1 spot, especially if they win the Big Ten championship, which is what they'll need to do to get the number 1 spot. Number 2, I have UGA. I think SEC's been ridiculous over the last 4 weeks, and I think UGA is the more consistent team out of all these guys. So I have them at the 2. Number 3, I have Clemson. They feel like the best team in the ACC. Miami's had some scares recently. Clemson has not. I saw somebody talking about how Clemson hasn't beat anyone. And while it is kind of true, they don't have a signature win yet. They're rolling through the teams they should be rolling through. They lost to, you know, Georgia by a ton in week one, but that was week one, and we're a long ways away from that. Number four, the Big 12 winner is BYU, in my opinion. I've had them on here for six straight weeks now at this point. At a point when it was crazy, now it's not getting too crazy anymore. They're a top 10 ranked team nationally, which is pretty ridiculous to even say.
I really wish they played good against Colorado.
Yeah, that'd be fun. But they're the number four spot.
Yeah.
On to the next seven, 5 through 11.
All right, we'll start it off at number five with the Ohio State University. If they beat Penn State and or Indiana, it's still going to be the toughest resume for any one loss team. I guess if they did lose to Oregon, they'd be a two loss team again, but still an incredible resume. It's very similar with Texas here at the sixth spot. Their only loss is to Georgia. They're going to be just fine. They have two elite quarterbacks. So if any of them go down, we know they're going to be in the game. Number seven, Notre Dame. They just keep bumping up a little bit every week. They just got to beat Army. Just beat Army. I'm not worried about USC because Army's pretty interesting right now, at least offensively these days. At number eight, we have Miami. Their schedule isn't very hard either. It's just that Miami-Clemson championship game, I think they should both get in no matter what happens. At number nine, Texas A&M. First in the SEC right now. Massive advantage. It's a really tough place to play if they get a home playoff game. And I called this one A&M over LSU. So happy about that. At number 10, maybe a shocker to some people. If this was my poll, I'd have Indiana in the top 12. If Indiana, you know, worst case situation scenario, they're 11-1 with one loss to Ohio State. That gets you into the playoff. Their coach just went undefeated with JMU. He is obviously on to something great here. And maybe he even moves up even further if DeBoer gets fired from Alabama. We'll see. That'll be interesting. And speaking of Alabama, at the 11th spot, I have a tie right now, Alabama or Tennessee. If Tennessee gets demolished by Georgia, they don't belong here. But you know the committee loves their SEC schools. 11-1 Tennessee gets in just like Indiana will. A two-loss Bama team with a tough win over A&M maybe would get an opportunity at 11. I just have a feeling they're going to try to sneak one more SEC team in there. And then 12, of course, I'm going to stick with my guys, Boise State. They got the job done in Vegas. It feels like the really tough part of the schedule is over now. Oregon State, a team we thought we may have some trouble with, just lost 44-7 to Cal. And we don't have to play Notre Dame. So, bam, 12 spot.
Yeah. Number five for me is going to be where I slot Ohio State. Their only loss is to number one Oregon at Oregon by 1 point. So it's a pretty favorable resume. It comes down to if they beat them in, you know, the Big Ten championship. And that's something that we just don't know yet. So I'm giving Oregon the benefit of the doubt there. Next up, it's number six. I have Texas. The loss to Georgia sucked. That's not something that I expected to have happen. But it's something that did happen. And I still think they're probably the second best team in the SEC. And that's saying something because there's a lot of good teams in there. Next up is Miami. I do think they go undefeated through the regular season. They lose to Clemson in the ACC championship. And they still make the playoff regardless, which is a good scenario to be in. Next up is Penn State. I do think they lose to Ohio State, but I think they probably find a way throughout the rest of the regular season to be just fine, which would set up an Ohio State-Oregon Big Ten championship game instead of a Penn State-Oregon Big Ten championship game. And I think Penn State is going to get in regardless, which could help them not being in there. Because if they were to – imagine if they – I don't know. I can't explain that sufficiently.
No, I know what you mean. I did the same thing with Indiana in my simulation. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you lose the Big Ten or SEC, you're still getting in most likely is what I'm trying to say. And same thing with the ACC, I guess now, especially if it's Clemson, Miami with how we expect it to go. The number nine team for me is going to be where I slot Tennessee. This team I definitely think is a tier below Ohio State, Texas, Miami, and maybe even Penn State as well too. But I do think they end up getting in. It's not going to be super pretty, though, which is interesting because we haven't really seen non-pretty seasons get into the college football playoff, which we're going to see now with the expanded 12 team. Next up, number 10. I debated a few different teams. I ended up going with Iowa State here. They are undefeated. I do think they have a chance to get through the entire regular season undefeated. I don't think they're as good as BYU, but if they go through the regular season undefeated, lose the Big 12 championship game, I think they're going to be more compelling to get in than an Indiana, which is unfortunate for them because they've been really good so far. Number 11 is going to be where I slot Texas A&M. Just another SEC school. You know the narrative. They've been good. They lost in week one, which I think helps their case of 1-7 in a row now at this point. And then the number 12 team, you don't change, I don't change either. I'm going Army. This is a team I've believed in. This is Bryson Daly, a guy that I've believed in the entire season. I'm looking forward to that game against Notre Dame. But they got a lot of stuff to do before then. And that starts with North Texas, I believe, this Saturday.
That'll be a great one. It's not on the list, but that's one you should check up on.
Yeah. But that's going to do it for Hoosier 12. We'll move into our layups and bold predictions next. It's a good week for our bold predictions and layups. I'd say we went 3 out of 3 because Embiid didn't play for Skyler's bold prediction, which we'll get into a second. So it was green for Detroit minus 11 versus the Tennessee Titans on Sunday. And Skyler's was green for Boise State's win at UNLV on Friday night, right?
Yes, sir.
This week I have another NFL game that I'm choosing. And I'm going with the Baltimore Ravens minus 9.5. I think they could definitely win by 10 at home against the Broncos. I'm just hating as well, too. This is something I always do with the Broncos. But I definitely do think that this is a pick that I like going into this weekend.
I am going to pick a college game for my layup that we were just talking about here. It's Ohio State at Penn State. I'm going to take Ohio State minus 3.5 on the cover. The quarterback's going to be Bo Prabula from York, Pennsylvania, hometown kid, finally gets his opportunity. They didn't look very good at Wisconsin last week, so I'm going to bet on Ohio State to get the job done.
Last week, bold prediction. It wasn't Super Bowl, but I picked Orlando on opening night of the NBA against Miami. I guess it was opening night, but the opening day for most of the teams. Orlando does get the win in Miami, though. They look good in that game. Paulo had not in that game, but last night he had nearly a 50-point triple-double, which is pretty crazy. Skyler had Embiid over 40 against Milwaukee. That game never happened for Embiid because he didn't play. So
Maxie had 40 the other day.
I'm not putting it red. I'm just okay. I'll just clear. So we're 3-3 on the weekend. That one pushes. This week I have Cleveland plus 105. Obviously not the boldest pick. They are playing the Chargers at home in Cleveland. I like Jameis to score 20 points, and I don't think the Chargers offense is going to score 20 points against the Browns defense. So that's my reasoning for that. But that's what I got for the bold prediction.
I'm going back-to-back college this week. It's been harder and harder for me to find bold predictions for the NFL. I mean, even look at yours, 105. If you were betting big money, it'd be risky. Vegas is on to us. But college, not quite. I'm taking Arkansas plus 210. They're going to beat number 19 Ole Miss. I've said it before on here. Ole Miss runs a very gimmicky offense. It's not working without Quinshon Judkins. They lost to Kentucky. So I'm going to go with Boise's old friend, Talen Green, to run all over the Ole Miss defense and get an upset win at home.
And I guess I misspoke about Army because they play Air Force this week.
Oh, Biff, that's big too.
1-6. They hopefully should be fine, but
well, for the, still their honor.
For their honor. Yeah. But that's going to do it, though, for episode 216 of these things. Kind of crazy. Into the fifth year of Macklin Sports, which we've talked about multiple times. That's going to do it. I guess we'll see you guys next week, unless you got anything that you want to say here at the end. Dodgers likely going to win the World Series today. Congratulations to them.
Isn't that funny how that works with us sometimes? They're probably going to win it tonight, and we'll talk about it again in a week.
Next week. Yeah. That's how things go.
Well,
we should have pre-recorded a congratulations, Dodgers. You've won the World Series.
Okay. Since this is being recorded, I can throw that at the end or the beginning. We'll see. We'll see what happens tonight. If I'm editing it and then we see Freeman Homer again, then perfect.
That's funny. But it kind of reminds me of the, you know, how they show the commercial, like, right after the team wins the World Series or the Super Bowl. You can get your merchandise now, and they show the shirts and everything. But yeah, Dodgers should win it today. If they don't, they'll probably win it tomorrow. And if they don't do that, then they'll win it on Friday. So that's how it is. Freddie Freeman, World Series MVP.
Yeah.
Next week, then, if the MLB season does end, we'll probably do free agency predictions for the MLB, which is always fun. Team grades for the four teams that were in it at last. So the Guardians, the Mets, the Yankees, and the Dodgers, of course. I wonder what that Dodgers grade would be. But yeah, you got anything closing? I know I've said that multiple times and I kept rambling. So
I got one last thing. Do you think Freddie Freeman takes the truck or the Camaro?
Oh, he's a truck guy. 100%.
That's what I'm thinking. But he is in LA now. Maybe he gives the wife the Camaro.
Maybe. That could happen. I don't know. What's his contract? $210 million? I think he could just, if he doesn't want, he wants both, he'll just get, you know, both of them. That's just how it is. But,
well, I'm excited.
When we pick, when we pick Juan Soto to the Dodgers next week, that's going to be crazy as well, too.
Don't even get me started, man. I can't wait to talk about random relievers with a 5 ERA. Tis the season.
Yeah, but they're going to go to the Dodgers and have a 1.6 ERA in 75 innings with 135 strikeouts.
Well, all right. We'll be back next week for 217.
Peace.